Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Alex Lasnik has supported independent tech news directly for 5 years. Be like Alex. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, March 11th, 2019. Tom Merritt is out traveling today, but from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
Also from Los Angeles, I'm Lamar Wilson.
And I'm Roger, the show's producer, who will just turn on this camera right there. And you can see my face, but if you're listening to the audio, you don't know what's going on.
I have no idea who this is.
Lamar, you outed me. I didn't say I was from Los Angeles.
Oh.
Now
sorry.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. Oh, no.
That's all right. It's a big city. You'll never find me. All right. We've got quite a few things to talk about, including facial recognition at airports and how we should all panic, or maybe why we should not panic. But first, let's start with a few tech things you should know. Facebook sued two Ukrainian men for allegedly scraping user data through quiz apps such as character and popularity tests. We've all seen them, that also injected ads into their news feeds, potentially for years. Around 63,000 Facebook users' browsers, mostly from Russia and the Ukraine, are said to have been affected.
Tidal's high-res MQA music tracks are now available to listeners in Tidal's iOS app. The feature came to Android phones back in January and first became available to Tidal's desktop listeners last year. High-res audio is defined as anything with a higher bit rate or sampling frequency than a 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz, I hope I said the right, standard used by CDs.
Estonia, in the modern world, Estonia's recent parliamentary election saw 44% of total votes were made online. The 247,232 votes made by Estonia's i-voting system marks a record for the percentage of the electorate and total numbers of votes cast. Online voting in the country launched in 2005 and is open from the 10th to the 4th days before an election.
As of Wednesday, March 13th, it will be illegal to fly a drone within 3 miles of an airport in the UK. Currently, the UK imposes a 0.6-mile limit. The rule changes were first announced last month after drone activity shut down Gatwick Airport for more than 24 hours. In November, anyone flying a drone over 250 grams or 8.8 ounces will need to take an online safety test beforehand and register with the country's aviation authority. Amen to this.
Yeah, that Gatwick Airport shutdown happened right around Christmas. Mm-hmm. I remember lots of people were stranded. Bad news around the holidays. All right, let's talk a little bit more about NVIDIA and where it wants to go next, Lamar.
Yeah, so NVIDIA agreed to acquire the networking chip and component maker Mellanox for $6.9 billion. Now, ooh, NVIDIA's offer is a 14% premium on the current stock price at $125 per share. The move would further bolster NVIDIA's data center division, which has already tripled sales in the past 3 years and currently makes up a third of total company revenue. Reuters reports that NVIDIA outbid Intel in negotiations for Mellanox. The acquisition must now be approved by regulators before being finalized.
You know, Roger, you and I were talking about this before the show and the fact that NVIDIA needs to expand into other places. It's certainly it's a leader in its space, but it's faced increasing competition from other companies, Intel being one of them, and data centers is one of those places that it can expand into.
I mean, it's definitely a situation where I think NVIDIA has kind of moved to a place where it's kind of just saturated the market that it's been in, which was GPUs for the longest time. And they've tried to branch out into automotive with their ARM-based offerings. And I think they want to move out into another place where ARM processors can make a difference, and that's data centers, right? You see it with Qualcomm. You see it with a lot of other manufacturers. Even AMD has been dabbling with ARM architecture. And it makes sense because, you know, Intel is developing in-house another in-house GPU program, maybe more successful than Larrabee this time around. AMD already has ATI, so I mean it's going to be the only it would be the only company out there that's very single tracked if they stay with GPU, and they need to branch out into other markets.
Yeah, so not only do you see this, you know, consolidation as you were saying, you know, with the companies, but you are also getting a shrinking customer list. You're getting more and more companies are making their own chips, or just outright not using NVIDIA. So prices are going up for them. So, you know, this kind of consolidation makes sense. You know, they're already huge in gaming. Jumping into AI and data centers is the next logical thing, and is a lot of this is just kind of back in. Us as consumers won't really notice or care about the difference of this. So, you know, I probably expect it to go through the regulatory approval pretty fast.
I think it remains to be seen if it ends up being as successful for them as they have been with GPUs, because GPUs have traditionally been something that NVIDIA's excelled at. And, you know, the other markets they're going into are a lot more crowded than the GPU one is.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, that the data center division has done well and currently makes up a third of NVIDIA's total company revenue. That was actually a surprise to me. I didn't realize that it was such a big part of NVIDIA's business already.
Me neither, yeah.
And I think it also kind of illustrates how mature the GPU market is. And when I mean the GPU market, I mean specifically the consumer GPU market. There's always going to be a market for NVIDIA like Quadro and AMD ATI Fireline cards, which are more more institutional, industrial, CAD/CAM developer usage. That they've kind of maxed out that point, and they really just need to, like, hey, we got other markets that we need to start looking into to expand our financial base.
Unless cryptocurrency gets hot again, and then it's GPUs for days.
Uh-oh, my light went out. Sorry about that. Let me get that change fixed.
There's a ghost in the machine, Lamar.
There's a ghost.
All right. The European Union's Competition Commissioner, Marguerite Vestager, responded to Elizabeth Warren's proposals from last week. And by the way, we had a great discussion about it on Friday's show. If you missed it, Tom and Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young and Roger and I had a great conversation about it. So if you missed that show, go ahead and listen to it. A lot of good information anyway. That was last week's news. It was big news on Friday. Elizabeth Warren wants to break up big tech companies. That's a very simplistic way to explain all of her ideas. Speaking to Recode's Kara Swisher at South by Southwest over the weekend, Marguerite Vestager said, and I'll just quote her directly, "To break up a company, to break up private property would be very far-reaching, and you would need to have a very strong case that it would produce better results for consumers in the marketplace than what you could do with more mainstream tools. We're dealing with private property, businesses that are built and invested in and become successful because of their innovation. As for those more mainstream alternatives, Vestager pointed to an agreement last month that was struck between European political institutions on regulating online platform transparency as a fairness-focused intervention that countries that counters market imbalance. Lamar, yep. I mean, without getting too political, did you follow Warren's proposals? Did anything strike you as a little out to lunch or right on the money or somewhere in between?
Yeah, so I watched you all on Friday, and I'm glad you had Justin on kind of do that political part for you all. Yeah, he really is. So it's expected. And what I mean is, like, it's an easy target to say, you know, Google bad, break up good, and very, very Hulk style. And so I'm not surprised at that. I'm surprised that the European Union is kind of taking a hey, we don't know we should do this, because remember, you know, what happened with Microsoft, back in the day. And even now they have a big case against Google. Of course, that is more antitrust. But they've been known to be very a little bit more hardline on U.S. companies and these big companies of having too much power. So I mean, it's interesting to see her take a more measured stance. Well, and you know, I guess I have a few base opinions on it. I don't necessarily see, you know, the problem with big, you know, big companies are being balanced and offering good services. I'm not saying there should be one monopoly. I don't think that can ever happen again. I think what Microsoft was building can probably never be replicated. I think having three or four good companies doing it is about as balanced as probably going to be.
I think part of it is that there's a tacit understanding, at least at the EU, that they still rely on these companies, whether it's Google, Facebook, Apple, as big and you know, the being the 800-pound gorillas in their respective markets. I mean, they always will bring a lot of regulatory attention upon themselves. But, you know, it is a delicate balance. And I think, you know, what Marguerite is stating is that, yeah, we want to regulate you, but it doesn't mean we want to eliminate you. And I think it's very important because it says to them, like, we want to do business, but we want to do business on our terms rather than.
Well, Elizabeth Warren isn't talking elimination either, though.
Well, she's not, but she's talking about breaking up, which you know, if you're old enough to remember, Ma Bell, AT&T was the only phone company in the U.S. for the longest time, and when that broke up, that was huge. I mean, that shattered what a 50, 60, 70 year monopoly on a telecommunications market. I mean, we're not dealing with that on that scale, but you know, it's very easy for a lot of that rhetoric to amp up a lot of and inflame a lot of passions about, like, we got to take these giant companies down. They drive up the cost of real estate. They you know, they know all our information. They control us. They can track us. You know, there's a lot of fear, and there's also a lot of emotional you know, investiture that people have put in these things. And so,
well, and there are also different laws based on what countries we're talking about. And some of these companies that are in question here that are huge do comply with various regional regulations as well. So it's complicated.
Yeah. Absolutely. Moving on, the U.S. government says it will downgrade intelligence sharing with Germany if Huawei wins a contract to build out the country's 5G infrastructure, according to a letter from U.S. Ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, to Germany's Economics Minister, Peter Altmaier. Germany has not found conclusive evidence that the Huawei technology is used for spying by the Chinese government, although they concede the company could be compelled to do so in the future.
I love this. We're gonna increase intelligence sharing because of the threat of intelligence sharing that we think might be not kosher.
Yeah. So the whole take on this is essentially we supply information to these foreign governments in return of them providing, you know, intelligence to us about movement of people, movement of political governments. For example, Germany's closer to Eastern Europe than the U.S., and they might have a better feel about what's going on with the governments and policies and stuff like that. The idea behind this, of course, is to put pressure on Huawei, whether it's, you know, whether you agree with it or not, it is part of a larger plan to kind of put a pressure on Huawei because it is, at least in the current administration's view, a proxy for the Chinese government, right? So there is very much a geopolitical element to it that goes beyond just plain technology business, but rather an intertwining of business as diplomacy. And so, you know, what they're saying to the EU is like, well, we can't really give you, or Germany, I should say, we really can't give you all this, you know, upper tier information, because if you use Huawei's 5G network, we can't be sure that that information will not be eavesdropped on.
Yeah, this is a complex issue. And I'll be real short with this, just, you know, with this current conflict we're having with China, with the, you know, the trade talks and now, you know, this intelligence sharing. I'm not sure where this goes. It seems to stifle innovation, but I understand the security concerns, but I mean, it almost feels a little.
The Huawei story is a very complicated, you know, very, very intermeshed, in some cases, very complicated. especially in tech and convoluted. Yeah. But tech, as we all know, is big business, and business is on the mind of everyone involved. And so, I mean, it's one of the problem is there is no plan. There is no this is where we want to be, you know, in 10 years time. This is where we think we want to be in terms of political relations. But how we get there is totally up in the air at this point.
I agree.
Let's talk about Tesla, shall we?
Hey.
In a blog post, Tesla announced it will keep more retail stores open, kind of walking back the news from last week than it had previously been stated by CEO Elon Musk. The company stated it has already closed 10% of retail locations with another 20% under review. As a result of keeping more locations open, average vehicle pricing will increase 3%, but will not impact the new $35,000 base Model 3.
So I had a question, and maybe some in the audience may be thinking the same thing. Did Tesla was obviously initially pushing online. They still do. Did they make retail to comply with local laws that you have to have a retail location to sell cars? Because I know that was a conflict with some states, maybe cities that were trying to keep them out. So because I was wondering where this. We're going to take the stores away, and now we're going to leave them come from. I didn't think they had that many stores to begin with. I only see a couple here in LA.
Yeah, like some states require you have a dealership network in that state in order to actually sell a car. Like you would not be able to sell a car the way you would sell a lamp on Amazon.
I know in Tesla's case, and yeah, it depends on the region, of course, but in many cases, it was just a showroom. You know, come see this car. When you do, you're going to fall in love with it even more. And there was a retail location I visited in LA down by the airport, actually, in the El Segundo area, where they've got a whole big operation going on down there. And yeah, I mean, it was not totally like a normal dealership, but it was designed to sit in the car, look at this cool, you know, that sort of iPad dash situation, yeah. and make it harder to deny yourself this wonderful car, because of course, you know, it's like buying anything online. You know, if you can see it and touch it and you've got like tactile touch to it, you are more likely to get it.
Yeah. So maybe that's part of the outrage of them saying they were going to close more. People want to, you know, they want to be able to see and touch.
And some of it is just like, you know, why are you closing? Are you losing money? Are you not making enough money? I mean, there's a lot of Tesla occupies that space where it is both a unicorn and the ultimate, you know, bullseye. Like everyone wants to throw something at Tesla because, you know, whether or not you like their cars, whether or not you like Elon, I mean, you're just a high profile target. And so whatever you do, as any celebrity can tell you, will be met with a lot of suspicion and, you know, a lot of people doing like, you know, are you not making your bottom line? Do you need to lower the price of these cars because you're not selling enough? You know, there's a lot of those kinds of questions, but it could be like, you know, we don't need to blow money on these things that don't necessarily add to the bottom line when we could use those resources to either, you know, increase production or, you know, lay out cash somewhere else.
Although, and I know it doesn't apply to the Model 3, which I'm also not getting, but I know enough folks who have Teslas that I'm familiar with them. They're lovely cars. They're out of my price range, but I don't need to go to a retail location. So the fact that vehicle pricing will increase 3%, if I was in the market, I would say, that sucks because I don't actually need to go to a retail location. I already know I want the car and now it's a little bit more expensive.
Absolutely. I'm not going to buy it either.
I mean, I'd love one. I would.
I feel like you need a house. I have that's the only thing I'm against electric cars. You need a house to be able to fully take advantage of it so you can charge it daily. I don't know, unless you're in a really good area that has chargers everywhere. I don't know. That's
actually a really good point. Yeah, it's out of my price range, and I also don't know where I'd plug it in.
That's literally my problem.
That's not happening. All right, everybody, to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. All right, everybody, let's talk about privacy at the airport. Shall we?
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. All right. I'll kind of set this up and Lamar, jump in at any time if you want to. There's a lot of information here. The Electronic Privacy Information Center published a long document, 346 pages, outlining how U.S. Customs and Border Protection is implementing biometric entry exit systems using facial recognition at major airports in the U.S. Now, BuzzFeed News, which obtained this document, notes that there was no period for public comment on the system before implementation began. So that's the people go, oh, no, oh, this is all happening behind the public's back, right? Foreign travelers can have their images stored for up to 14 days. It's not totally clear how cooperating airlines and third parties can use this data, this facial recognition data, going forward, because, of course, these are leaked documents. Now, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we'll call them CBP, is operating under an executive order that was signed by President Trump in 2017 to expedite biometric verification of all U.S. international travelers in the top 20 airports by 2021. But important to note, approval for this system was initially signed into law during the Obama administration. So this has been going on for a while. Document states that 17 airports currently have system trials in place with the goal of initial operating capability of scanning 30 international flights per day by the end of 2019, which is that's right around the corner.
I'll go ahead.
Well, okay. So the systems, the way that they work is matching up a passport photo of an international traveler. So, you know, there's my passport photo that's in the system with real-time images captured at airport. So I'm walking through the airport. A camera sees me, says, yep, that's Sarah Lane. We know who she is. Hopefully they match me correctly. That's who I am. An audit in late 2017 found that there was about an 85% successful match rate, which is sure, that sounds pretty good, right? 85%, okay, you're, you know, close to 100 than zero, but you're certainly not 100%. You're going to get some false positives there, you're going to miss some folks as well. Lamar, as somebody who I know you do a fair amount of traveling, and you know, we can go back and forth between, you know, you want to catch the bad guys at airport, so there's this all seems like, okay, they're not doing it for no reason. They're doing it for very specific reasons. But where does privacy end and kind of the scary stuff begin?
This is and forgive me, audience, if I sound very simplistic with this, but like I kind of already thought this kind of thing was happening already. You know, like we have cameras everywhere that is already tracking you, especially in airports. If anything, I would think this kind of system would be helpful to maybe expedite a foreign traveler. Okay, we see them walking down. Yep, that's them. We, you know, the matching that will take them less time to get through security. I'm not seeing the outcry and negative here unless we start talking about what these airlines are going to do with the data. They said they hold it for 14 days, but what happens? I'm sorry for the life. What happens after that? Does it, you know, are they using it for marketing purposes, or you know, are they, you know, trying to figure out how much you travel and sit? Like, I'm not sure where the negative is here.
Well, I think the negative.
I'm having trouble with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious negative is if the AI systems don't work well enough, then you're going to have a lot of people inconvenienced at best.
Sure, the 15%, right?
And then I think there's also, you know, there's certainly a large portion of people who are like, well, what airports and why don't we know about it? And is it my airport, the one that I go to often? And where's the cameras? And there's that whole, this has been going on for some time. This is not necessarily a secret, but something that has been, it is farther along, I think, than a lot of folks assumed. And that always tends to upset people.
Yeah, I just think, I look, from my point of view, you know, just you know, we've been around as adults since, 2001. What we know when those attacks, so we have, you know, full awareness. We were kids when that. So we and I just assumed from then on it was just, you know, we see it in the movies, you know, where it's just that biometric, you know, they scanning or the finger. Like, I just assumed that was coming and it would just be a thing. I'm surprised it's just now here. I get people's angst about more data of them being stored, but you know, if you walk through an airport, you've seen it. I mean, I look where, you know, I'm not trying to look like I'm, you know, they probably will stop me if I'm looking at too many cameras, but like, I know where they are. and I just accepted that that's, you know, if you're gonna fly, that's just how it is.
I think a lot of it also has to do with just general profiling, right? Like, how do you, is this just, you know, if you developed in a totally agnostic, totally ambivalent system to a person's appearance, and then you slowly develop it to target certain individuals, for example, a lone male who wears a certain type of clothing, perhaps facial hair, you know, headdress or anything, mm-hmm. that stuff tends to lead over time to an unfairly biased way of identifying people, especially in a security setting, which tends to disadvantage minorities at a greater rate than the general population.
I mean, are we talking about like just when I'm thinking of biometric, I'm like literally thinking of, you know, you see those movies, yeah. the eye points and faces. Yeah. I'm not even thinking about dress.
But that's the worry, right? It's not just mm-hmm. all this stuff doesn't exist in a vacuum. Biometrics is fine, right? It's the implementation. Yeah. that mm-hmm. people will have issues with. And I think, you know, at least based on American, you know, security history, there have been a lot of false positives where people are misidentified because they happen to appear as something that they were not, based solely at the discretion of whoever's operating it. Now, you can use machine learning, but as we've discussed, and Tom has mentioned in previous episodes, machine learning is often biased by the people that develop it, right? And that's why you would want a very diverse, a very broad set of people helping to develop it, because you can Absolutely. Then kind of kick out those subconscious biases that people tend to put into a system.
I think those are good points. I just like... I don't know if we can answer this now. Like, what's the alternative? Yeah, and I think you answered it partially by just saying just a more diverse amount of people, making sure that it's a balanced system, and that'll reduce some of that. I think that's a really good first step.
Got some breaking news, everybody. Apple announced it will hold an event on March 25th with an invitation showing a countdown and the words, "It's showtime."
Ooh, they're buying Showtime.
Gonna be right. That was actually what I thought. I'm like, that's very specific to the Showtime network. Apple is expected to announce the TV and Apple News subscription services. We've talked about this in the past. The Verge also noted that Apple first used that tagline, "It's Showtime," for a September 2006 event, where it announced that it would start offering movies on iTunes.
Wow.
Interessante. I did not remember that. Yeah,
no, I wasn't even born then.
I was very, very young as well.
Yeah, I'm excited because I knew their TV thing was coming, and you know, I've been bouncing around TV networks, YouTube TV, and I'm now using Hulu. I'm excited to see what they're offering. I like Hulu so much, I doubt I'm gonna jump off of it, but I want to see what they got going. I already heard that you all probably talked about the Apple News controversy mm-hmm. with the 50% whatever crazy amount they're taken from the publishers. So I'm surprised they got that ready to go.
I'm excited for the event because I'm excited to stop speculating about what the event will be about. Because we've been doing that for, it seems like, a solid year now. Maybe more.
That's Apple. That's Apple News for you.
It is. All right. March 25th, everybody. That'll be a fun day on the show. Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Also a fun place to hang out. Submit stories and vote on other stories at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You help us make our show every day, so we thank you. It's so nice for you to participate. We're also on Facebook. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow is where to hang out with us there. All right, let's move over to Chris Christensen, a.k.a. the Amateur Traveler, who has a story on why it sometimes pays to read the EULA.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. It's been talked on DTNS many times about how people don't read those user agreements online. Apparently, Donalyn Andrews, who is a Georgia high school economics teacher, does. And by doing so, she read the details of the policy she had bought, the travel insurance policy at squaremouth.com, and found an embedded contest where she won $10,000. Squaremouth said they were expecting that contest to go on for as long as a year. We're surprised that someone discovered it within 23 hours. So apparently some people do read the fine print. I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
If I thought I would win things, I would read them a lot more carefully too.
Well, yeah. Well, see, now it's not going to work because everybody's going to read it now. Well, maybe it did work. Yeah.
Isn't that funny? The companies.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
We thought it would take so much longer. We didn't think anybody was going to read this.
They probably didn't have that money saved up either. They in trouble. They better pay that.
Yeah, blew up in your face, didn't it? Now you got a customer who won a contest. All right, real quickly, let's check the mailbag. AOJ had some thoughts on our story from last Friday about Philadelphia requiring almost all merchants to accept cash.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had some potential workarounds, such as, if these cashless stores want to keep being cashless despite the new law, I would think they could just use a membership model. People thought people through their web portal become a member of their club, then the club's terms of service could indicate the club member's acceptance for having their credit cards on file or acceptance of only credit cards for club debts. The store then gets their club member to use the web portal on their phone or to pay, make the payment, which in turn gets reported to the store. That sounds complicated, but I get where you're going with this.
I understand it, but from someone who's worked exactly 2 years in retail, I think you would see a huge dip. Not like half, but 15% dip if you were forcing people just to go into a membership model.
Yeah.
But membership models are consistent money, so
It's easy for someone to be like, I don't want to do that. I'll just go
only, only if that membership me. Typically involves some fee. Right. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like $15 a year, people say, well, I spent money on this, so I should probably buy some from that store.
That's what Amazon Prime does for me. Yeah.
Have you ever used a cashless place? I think Tender Greens is the only place I've used here that was like cashless, which is cool. I don't carry cash anyway, but.
I've been to Tender Greens and I didn't notice that, but I don't really carry cash either. So yeah it's very, in fact, was, the I only places them. That I notice is places that are cash only. And those are the places where I'm like, oh man, I got to use your ATM and it's like $5.
They love that. Yes.
I'm old guy from 20th century. I always carry cash. Always.
Well, I know. Well, Roger, you're the better person.
You are not better.
I'm just older.
Just smarter. No, it's true. Thanks to Lamar Wilson, Ban Cash, my brother in arms. Lamar, it's good to have you here on this fine Monday. Tell folks where they can keep up with your work.
Yeah, so I'm primarily on YouTube. I do mystery unboxings of every genre. We got a couple coming up this week. One of my favorites is an Amazon Returns box. I always love those. Where you spend $150 and they say you get $1,500 worth of stuff, and it never is usually like that. So check me out on YouTube. I'm also being very bullish on Instagram right now. Instagram is a really good portal. I'm putting a lot of video content there too. So at Lamar Wilson on Instagram if you want to see what I'm doing every day.
It is very entertaining. I gotta hand it to you, Lamar.
Oh, I forget. Yeah, you are on there.
Yes, I'm also on Instagram, and we're friends. So yes, I see your content. Our goal each month, you know what our goal is. It's a simple goal. It's a proud goal, just to get one more patron than last month. You could be that person who puts us over the top. Maybe bring a friend in. Become a DTNS member and get an ad-free RSS feed. You get special episodes. You get special goodies, special episodes looking back on the news of the past, all sorts of good stuff. Sign up at patreon.com/DTNS. You want to buy a mug, maybe a t-shirt, maybe a beanie. DailyTechNewsShow.com/store is where you can check out all of our merch. There's some really good stuff there. Also, our email address, just to remind you, is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com. We're live Monday through Friday. If you want to join us live, we'd love to have you. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 22:30 UTC. I think it's 20:30 UTC, actually. You can find out more at DailyTechNewsShow.com/live. Tom Merritt is back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Frog Pants Network. Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.